Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, the vacation season is in full swing, so this hour we thought it'd be a good idea to have a refresher on how our world of air travel and airports is changing. A little bit later in the hour, we'll check in with the Des Moines International Airport and see how business is there. Also, some tips, some lesser-known facts on navigating the Des Moines Airport, the largest airport in Iowa. Also, the Real ID policy that's going into effect, that's next year in 2020, that has an effect on air travel. We'll talk with someone from the Iowa Department of Transportation about that. In the second half hour, some research on airplane and airport itineraries, some research from a University of Iowa professor in the School of Business at the University of Iowa. May help you figure out your itineraries in the future. But first of all, let's talk about the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration, created in response to the attacks on 9/11. This is an agency that's within the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, responsible, of course, for the security of our traveling here in the U.S., chiefly concerned with air travel. They have the screening officers that we see very often at the airports, but also armed federal air marshals on planes, mobile teams of dog handlers, and explosive specialists as well. Let's talk, first of all, with Carrie Harmon. She's TSA Regional Public Affairs Manager based in Denver, Colorado. Carrie, welcome to our program.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Let's start by having you walk us through the process that we now experience as passengers before we board a plane, because I know there are layers of security and, you know, most passengers are asked to do things. We know the routine, those of us who travel quite a bit, but there are things that are seen and those that are unseen concerning these layers of security. Walk us through that.
Sure. Well, security begins even before you get to the airport. I think everyone knows that when you book an airline ticket, you put in some identifying information, your name, your birth date, and those particulars are checked against terrorist watch lists. So even before you get to the airport, we have security measures in place. And then everyone knows about going through a checkpoint. So the checkpoint provides physical security. When you check a bag at the airline ticket counter, that bag is also being screened. And then we have other layers that you mentioned, such as canines, explosives detection canines, and many other layers of security to keep you safe.
Mm-hmm. What is the latest technology used? Go ahead. Sorry.
We have many kinds of technology. A lot of passengers are familiar with what we call the body scanners. We also still use walk-through metal detectors, and we have increasingly sophisticated X-ray machines to screen your property. And the latest versions of those are similar to medical CAT scans in that they kind of slice and dice the images so we get a better look at what's inside your bag.
Mm-hmm. Are there technologies, security measures that you have in place that you really shouldn't talk about, are not permitted to talk about?
Well, again, the technologies I think most people are familiar with. We have the same kind of baggage screening technologies, but there are procedures in place that are behind the scenes as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, when we think about what it's like to be a TSA agent there, it's a lot of repetitive work. You're dealing with a lot of people flowing past you, and you have to check everyone. What are the greatest sort of human challenges there? Because someone staring at a screen all day looking for certain red flags, I imagine that's difficult on a human to do that hours and hours.
Well, our officers do have very difficult jobs and, quite frankly, sometimes thankless jobs. But we do everything that we can to keep them sharp. They train every single day. we rotate them among positions so that one officer is not sitting at an X-ray machine all day. And most of our officers are very happy to interact with passengers. Most passengers understand that they have a job to do. And so passengers and our agents work together to keep everyone safe.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about pat-downs. When is a pat-down check needed?
A pat-down is needed if a passenger alarms the technology. That's the most common reason. So for that reason, we highly recommend that people be prepared when they come to the airport. During the summer, for example, we see a lot more families. We see people who maybe don't travel so often. So we recommend that they go to TSA.gov and look over the rules. And that way, when they get to the checkpoint, they'll know that they need to take everything out of their pockets before they go through the body scanner, for example. And when they do that, that greatly decreases the chance that they'll need a pat down.
Mm-hmm. How do you test your systems? Do you, for instance, have a TSA employees, unbeknownst to the others in the system, who try to bring a device or something on board, a mock device, so that you can test whether your systems are effective?
Well, I can't get into details on testing, but yes, we do have many kinds of testing, both for the technology and our officers.
Mm-hmm. How often is a real security threat discovered? You're at Denver International Airport. Say at Denver, one of the larger hubs here. When is there a real threat? Does that happen on a daily basis, a weekly basis, that something is discovered? Not just someone accidentally having a pen knife in their pocket. I mean someone with some intent.
Well, we do see prohibited items every day. Unfortunately, we've seen a large increase in the number of firearms coming to checkpoints over the years. But the vast majority of people don't have ill intent. Our job is just to make sure that if somebody did have ill intent, that they would not be successful.
Mm-hmm. What are your greatest challenges at the moment?
I think the greatest challenge at the moment is the sheer number of passengers nationwide. In fact, over the 4th of July travel period, TSA had the single busiest day in its history, and that's combined passengers around the country. So at Des Moines, we were up about 5.5% in June. Cedar Rapids was up over 18% during that same time period. So when you have more passengers, that creates additional challenges. And again, passengers can help us by getting to the airport an hour and a half to 2 hours in advance of their flights and being prepared. Check your bag before you come to the airport. Make sure you don't have your favorite pocket knife in your pocket when you go through the technology. Make sure that you consume your beverages before you go to the checkpoint. Or a good travel tip is that you can take, for example, an empty water bottle through the checkpoint, and then you can fill it up on the other side. So all those things help us get you through quicker and more efficiently.
How can you adjust when you do have this uptick in activity, more passengers flowing through that have to get on airplanes, and you for sure don't want to be part of a delay in the system there? Do you hire more TSA people? Do you have a different procedure? How do you react to an increase of 5, 10, 15% in passengers?
Well, every airport's different, and every airport has a different checkpoint configuration. So we always work to maximize the number of lanes we have and the space that we have. But the most important thing is that every passenger needs to be screened to the same standards. And that's why it's really important that passengers get there, leave themselves enough time in case there is an unexpected delay.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the most common misperceptions that you and your officers run into from passengers about your system?
Well, I think some passengers think that the only security is at the checkpoint, which, as we've discussed, is not the case. A lot of times people don't understand which items are prohibited. And again, that causes delays. If you have a prohibited item in your bag, that's going to trigger a bag check that will hold you up, and it also holds up people standing in line behind you. So again, preparation is really important.
Mm-hmm. When you are dealing with a TSA officer, what are some do's and don'ts there? I mean, you want to politely interact with them. Joking around, this is not a place for joking around, right?
No, you would not want to joke about security or even jokingly say that you had something bad or dangerous on your person or in your bags, because we don't know if you're joking or not. And so that means that we have to check out that threat or that comment to make sure that it's not real. So our officers are here to help. Please ask them questions as you approach the checkpoint. If you don't understand a procedure, if you feel like you're not being treated with the respect that we ask our officers to provide, then you can always ask for a supervisor. If you need to undergo a pat-down, you can always ask for a private screening room. So I think the most important thing is to communicate with our officers. They're here for your safety and protection, and they're here to help you get through the checkpoint.
Mm-hmm. Carrie, can you, before we say goodbye, give us an idea of how this may be changing in the years to come? Is there some future technologies that will change in any way the way we have security in airports?
Well, we're always looking at new technologies, and the process for bringing a new technology, for example, to the checkpoint is those processes are ongoing. First, new technologies have to be checked in a lab and then in an airport environment. So I think in the future we will see some advancements in technology.
Mm-hmm. What does the TSA check add to the price of our ticket?
The TSA has a $5 and some odd cent supplement on airline tickets. That's per leg of the trip.
Okay, regardless of the length, just per check-in for the TSA. Okay.
Yes.
Carrie Harmon, TSA Regional Public Affairs Manager based in Denver. Thank you for the information, the conversation, Carrie.
Thank you so much, and I wish all your listeners happy and safe travels this summer.
Okay, thank you very much, Carrie. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In vacation season, we're getting a refresher on the changing world of air travel and airports, getting some reminders. Let's talk with the Communications, Marketing, and Air Service Development Manager at the Des Moines International Airport. Kayla Kavarna is with us. Hi, Kayla, in our Des Moines studio. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Doing well here. How's business at the Des Moines Airport lately?
Well, it's good. We've been seeing some record passenger increases here in Des Moines, and it's great to see our terminal busy.
Mm-hmm. Right off the bat, Colin, one of our listeners on Twitter asks, why is this an international airport? Is there customs? I've never seen a flight direct to a foreign country from Des Moines.
Great question, and one of my first when I started at the airport.
You had it too, huh?
Yeah, I certainly did. And so we're an international airport. We do have customs. It's actually for a lot of chartered flights that come in and out of our airport. And so certainly, you know, maybe in the future we'll have some international flights. That would be my goal as an air service development manager. But right now we don't, but we do have those chartered flights coming in and out, so we have customs. The other thing, too, is we've hosted some events here at our airport for global entry. And so if you're familiar with, like, TSA PreCheck, global entry is another way to get pre-screened for security so you can have a more expedited experience. And global entry, that is through Customs and Border Protection as well. So we do have two officers on site. We've had the additional full-time officer within the last couple of months.
Mm-hmm. Give us an idea of how many passengers and flights the Des Moines International Airport deals with every day or every week.
Sure, you bet. So For instance, June was our record-breaking month most recently, and we had in June over 265,000 passengers coming through the terminal. And so right now we're anticipating getting close to 3 million passengers for 2019. And for us, you know, that becomes a capacity issue with our aging infrastructure. So the Des Moines Airport was built in 1948. And so certainly at that time, they weren't anticipating 3 million passengers coming through. And so for us, that's where we get a little bit more congestion at that breaking point for that number of passengers. So we have lots of flights. We have 6 different carriers currently operating out of the Des Moines International Airport, servicing 20 nonstop flights to various markets and destinations. But we have a lot of connection travel. You know, you might fly through Denver to get to, you know, somewhere in California, et cetera. So certainly lots of flights coming in and out of our airport.
Kayla, what is contributing to these record-breaking numbers at the Des Moines International Airport?
There's a lot of things. I think the economy is a big part of it. People have a little bit more discretionary income. Here in the metro, we also have in central Iowa, you know, a lot of new millennials coming in. Travel's important to them. Adventure's important to them. And so we're seeing a lot of, you know, low-cost carrier flights like the Allegiance and the Frontiers who are offering a lower fare for individuals to take a quick, you know, 3 or 4 day weekend. So that helps. You know, in Des Moines, we have almost a 50-50 split for business and leisure travel, a little bit heavier on the business, but we're pretty close. And so we're seeing, you know, on a Monday, a lot of business travel. And then on Friday, you're going to see a completely different passenger base of individuals who are getting ready for a quick weekend.
Mm-hmm. What about caucus season up until February 3rd? Are you seeing a noticeable uptick in activity because of the caucus season?
You know what? I'm not sure if it's because of, but we certainly have seen an uptick there. And we do see a lot of candidates traveling in and out of our airport, which is fun. They certainly bring different staffers with them as well. So that supports. We have a pretty strong service to Washington, D.C. as well. So for our own, you know, state legislators and such. And so that is a big piece as well.
Mm-hmm. Quickly before we go, Caleb, talk a little bit more about the upgrades you have in store in terms of, I guess, building restructuring, remodeling, or new technology. What's coming up?
Yeah, you bet. So to help manage the increasing traffic and the capacity, we've started investing in a few different things. One of them would be a parking guidance system. It's operational in many areas already. The official launch is later this month, but essentially folks who are coming to the airport and are parking, they can not only get real-time parking availability on our website later this month. So before you head to the airport, you can see which parking lot you'd like to go to. But that guidance system is going to tell you how many spots are available in what lot. And then as you pull into that lot, it's going to direct you, you know, down this row, you're going to have, mm-hmm. you know, 20 spots available versus the next might only have 3 mm-hmm. to expedite that. We also are adding 400 additional spots to Economy 4 to help with the influx of passenger traffic. And then we have a live shuttle tracker as well on our website. So I think time is the biggest stress factor for folks when they are looking to come to the airport. Being at the airport 90 minutes ahead of time is certainly what we suggest. It gives you time to get parked into the terminal, get your boarding pass through that TSA checkpoint, and then hopefully you have time to grab a quick coffee. But we don't want you stressed out thinking you might miss your flight. So
exactly.
Getting there early is important.
Okay, we're hearing that from all of our guests today. Kayla Kovarna, thank you very much of the Des Moines International Airport.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too. Let's wind up this half hour with Darcy Doty, Director of Driver and Identification Services at the Iowa Department of Transportation. Darcy, hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
We want to talk to you about something that is a new term to most people because it's not even in effect yet. It's called the Real ID. What is it, and when will it come into effect?
Yeah, it will be in effect officially in October 1st of 2020, where the TSA will require that you show a Real ID compliant license or ID to go through airport security. Real ID is actually a nationwide federal act meant to protect you from terrorism and identity fraud. It was passed back in Congress back in 2005, and Iowa first started issuing Real IDs in 2013. However, some states are just now starting to issue Real IDs.
Mm-hmm. So what qualifies as a Real ID?
Yeah, so we need some, basically, it's really a re-verification of identity, and this act was passed as a security measure that resulted from the 9/11 terror attacks. So what we really need to see is additional identification, kind of re-verifying who you are in order to obtain that gold star on the ID. So what that means is proof of identity. So we need one of the following, such as a birth certificate, a valid passport, or any U.S. citizenship and immigration or refugee document. Mm-hmm. Also, a proof of Social Security number. So that could be just your Social Security card or a W-2 or 1099 form that has the entire Social Security number on it. Additionally, we require two proofs of residency, which could be a utility bill or a bank statement, a pay stub that shows the address where you live. And then if you've had any legal name changes, such as, getting married, so a marriage certificate to prove that name has changed.
Mm-hmm. So listeners wondering what they should do. Do we need to do anything at this point? Will the DOT inform us, or does it happen when our driver's license, for instance, comes up for expiration?
Yes. Yeah, so beginning October 1st, 2020 is when the Real ID actually comes into play. So if you are planning traveling domestically, you'll want to make sure that you have that gold star on that date or after. However, we encourage people not to wait until that date and to actually come in to obtain that Real ID. If they are looking at renewing soon, there is no additional charge to get that Real ID if you're planning to come in to renew your driver's license. It's just you just want to bring those additional documents. However, if you're not set to renew for a while, mm-hmm. and you want to make sure that you're covered by that October 1st date, you can come in to our service centers or a county treasurer who issues driver's licenses or ID cards, and you can get a replacement card for $10.
Hmm. Okay, that sounds good. Any other, we have a few seconds left. Darcy, any other information that we should know?
Yeah, if you're interested, please go to the iowadot.gov website and you can search for Real ID. And you'll be seeing a huge booth for the DOT at the State Fair for Real ID. So you can ask more questions about it there if you would like.
Okay, Darcy Doty, Director of Driver and Identification Services with the Iowa Department of Transportation. Thanks for your time in explaining Real ID policy going into effect, as you mentioned, in October of 2020. But it sounds like, Darcy, we can be proactive there, can't we?
Yes, thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too, Darcy. Coming up on after a short break, I'll talk with a professor of management sciences in the Department of Business Analytics at the Business School at the University of Iowa. She has studied airplane and airport itineraries, and coming up in this next half hour, her research will, I'm betting, help you plan your flight itinerary and give you some information you didn't know about how flights are scheduled, how to get from point A to B the quickest. It might not be what you think. We'll come back in just a moment. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. With vacation season in full swing this hour, we're looking at different aspects of the changing world of air travel, airports. Joining us this half hour is Ann Campbell. Ann is a professor in the Department of Business Analytics, also the Henry B. Tippey Research Professor at the University of Iowa School of Business. Ann Campbell, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
I want to talk about some interesting research that you've been doing, studying, looking at airplane, airport itineraries. Explain what you set out to do. What is your area of interest in airport itineraries?
Sure. So As you mentioned, I'm in the Department of Business Analytics, and sort of the theme we have in our department is really using all the data that companies are collecting to help them make better decisions. And so, or their customers make better decisions. And my work has always been in the field of transportation. And so we were looking at the data we have available about flight travel and trying to see what information there is that we could help make passengers be able to make better decisions. And one of the things we saw as an opening is there's not many people or statistics out there that help people when they're choosing a flight evaluate how likely their flight is going to make all of the connections they need and get to their final destination on time. When you go on Orbitz or any travel website, you can get how long the flight should take, how much it should cost, but there is nothing that really gave passengers an idea of how likely they would be able to make those connections, how likelihood those flights would be canceled, and they'd be able to get to that destination that they wanted to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that there is publicly available data. Anyone can get it. It costs nothing. For many years, of all of the flights at U.S. airports, it says every flight, what time it took off and what time it landed. And so we can easily collect the information about what flights have been canceled, how often they're canceled, mm-hmm. how much variety there is in the time they get to their destination. So the data was out there for us to be able to do what we thought would be really interesting for people, because as several of your callers were talking about, travel is stressful. And one of the most stressful things yeah. is going somewhere and your flight gets canceled or you miss your connection. And so if we could make some recommendations to consumers that, okay, maybe this flight is a little bit cheaper, but this one's 10% more likely to get you there,
oh.
that might be a more useful or be an additional piece of information that may be useful to consumers.
Extremely valuable. And you say this sort of information is not included when you go to Orbitz or Cheap Tickets or whatever you go to. They don't tell you. They just tell you the price and where you're going to go and how many stopovers.
They have a limited amount of information. The most you can usually get is something like the first flight. So for us, would be Cedar Rapids to Denver, is more than 15 minutes late 30% of the time, or something that's sort of useless if you're trying to figure out, well, how much yeah. more than 15 minutes late?
Okay.
You're right. And depends on my connection, how big of a deal that is. So they give you like a little bit, but not enough to really put together to really understand, is this a good itinerary?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
our theory yeah. is that maybe airlines don't want you to know that. And that's why, but really? That's just a guess.
Okay. So what did you find that gives us more valuable information on these type of flight delays and so forth?
So I think for most of us, we want to choose a flight that's cheap, or we want to choose a flight that gets there fast. So mm-hmm. we kind of looked at various benchmarks to compare, but starting with the ones that are the fastest, we wanted to evaluate if you looked at the fastest flights between various origins and destinations at different times of the day, how likely are just those able to get to the destination at the prescribed time? Just to get a baseline of what's the reliability situation we have now. Is it good? Is it bad? And what we found across all of the different experiments is on average, the reliability of flights that you book, if you always book the shortest, is about 83% chance that you will make all the connections and get there on time.
Mm-hmm. And this is domestic flights.
Domestic, right, because those mm-hmm. are the only ones we have the public data. And so we were trying to figure out then how much better we could get the number above 83%, and what would it take to change in your itinerary to be able to get that number to be higher. And essentially the answer is the longer you're willing to take to get from A to B,
mm-hmm.
then your reliability number or odds of getting to your destination on time get better, because you're more likely to make all of your connections.
Okay.
So we found, like, for example, if you're willing to make your flight travel just a little bit longer, like 6% longer, you can get your reliability up to 90. And if you're willing to make your travel get up to 25% longer, so maybe you're adding an extra half hour, an hour onto, depending on your trip, you can get the reliability up to 95%.
Mm-hmm.
And where you're getting that gain is you're getting flights from your original point to your connection point that are less likely to be canceled, ones that have less variability in what time they get to that destination, right? They're not always late. They're more likely to be on time. And where you're getting that increase in flying time is you're having a little bit longer layover time. Like a lot of us, when we go to book a flight these days, it'll potentially have like a 35-minute connection in Chicago.
Right. That's a nightmare.
Yeah. Those don't work. And that's why a little bit longer travel time can have the payoff in terms of being able to have that higher reliability in terms of your flight itinerary.
How do we decide on a case-by-case basis? Given what you just said, I understand what it means, not necessarily on paper or on the screen, the fastest way there is not the most reliable in terms of percentage. But how do we turn that around into how do you use that when you book a flight, for instance, that extra information that you gathered?
So I think that's the argument for why either airlines or third-party kind of companies like Travelocity or Expedia should use a tool like ours, because it's not always obvious which combination of flights is the most reliable. You really have to look at the historical information of the different flights so that you can have that data available on a website that says, like, okay, this one costs this much but has this probability. It's not straightforward. You have to be looking at the data to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. What about other variables like flying through certain airports, bigger hubs versus smaller hubs? We talked with the Des Moines International Airport, certainly not the size of Denver or Minneapolis or O'Hare. Did you look at that as a variable?
Sure. So we tried to look for patterns, kind of like what you're indicating, for what made certain itineraries generally better than others so you could build general insights. General patterns are direct flights are always the best, mm-hmm. right? Because once you take off, odds are pretty
reasons,
good.
Right?
You're going to get there. So if there is a direct flight option, that's the best you can do. The reliability really starts to be a factor the longer your flight is in terms of the number of stops you have in your trip. And always the fewer number of stops, the better, right? Because the fewer number of stops you have on your trip, so two stops versus three stops, you're more likely to be able to make those connections and not have to worry about being too late for the next flight.
Any stop you have just adds the uncertainty, right?
Correct. That's exactly the right word. And so fewer stops is better. Higher layover times are better.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one that may not be obvious, the first few are ones you could kind of guess, but better in the morning is also one that we observed. To leave in the morning, because if you think about it, a lot of planes have parked in that particular airport overnight. So you are their first flight of the day, where if you're like the eighth flight of the day on a particular plane, it's gone to eight different locations and had eight different possibilities of uncertainty,
right?
Of crews being late or weather delays.
Mechanical problems.
And so there turns out to be a lot more variation later in the day in terms of lateness and problems, where in the morning it tends to be better. And in terms of the airports, it also seemed like there was more variation in traveling through smaller hubs than larger hubs. And that's just sort of what the data showed, is there was less cancellations and variation in traveling through larger hubs.
Does that make sense to you?
But I think it makes some sense, because I was going to say a plane traveling through Atlanta is probably going to have a bigger size, a lot of people making connections. And so maybe if Delta has to make a priority, they may prioritize, some of the bigger flights with more people making connections than some of the people flying through another smaller airport if they have to make choices. Mm-hmm. But again, that may not be something they really want to feature and advertise, but it seems like if you're choosing hubs, going through bigger hubs seems to make it a little more confidence that your flight will go than through a smaller hub.
This is fascinating. I just want to remind any listeners that may have just joined us, Ann Campbell is with me, professor in the Department of Business Analytics in the University of Iowa School of Business. She's done a lot of research on airport itineraries, just really digging into some of this data, a lot of data that is, you say, publicly available that
yes.
just isn't being used. When we go to any number of places to book tickets, we just look at the price and what it says our arrival time, but not the probability that we will arrive at that time. And that seems to be what you're getting at with these additional factors.
Right. Is that's their plan, but it may not always go according to plan.
Why do you think this data is, I guess we could say, underutilized? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't know. I mean, because whenever we give presentations about this at conferences and things, a lot of people in the audience are always like, why hasn't anybody done this before?
Yeah.
And like I said, all I can say is maybe airlines don't want to say certain flights aren't all that reliable. But I would think a third party, like an Expedia or an Orbitz might be a good market for something like this. And so we've had some talks to work with the patent office at the university and see if there's some opportunities in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I should say the work is with a PhD student, Michael Redmond, who did all the data collection and did all the hard work of that. And my colleague, Jan Emke, who's at the University of Magdeburg. So it was a group effort mm-hmm. To do this. And particularly the student had to do a lot of the data collection piece and grinding out all of these results.
Any findings or facets here that we haven't touched on that we need to mention?
Well, one that I think that's kind of related to what Kayla talked about in Des Moines is she talked about the increase in flights in the Des Moines airport through Allegiant and Frontier. And one of the things we found is because summer has so many more flights, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of airlines add additional flights in the summer for vacations, that creates challenges in airports, that creates additional sources of uncertainty. Because now you've got that many more people to process. And for airports like the Des Moines Airport, who are undersized, balancing that more additional planes can create a challenge. So summer can actually be one of the worst times to fly in terms of reliability, even though it probably is the most fun time to fly.
Yeah.
So just a note there that summer's often not has extra problems
than
some
sense.
Other parts
yeah,
of the year.
That makes sense. How do you hope this research will be used?
Well, number one, we hope our student graduates and gets a very nice job
okay.
when he's done.
Yeah.
But we hope some company turns around and uses this and helps incorporate this into a tool, because I think the ultimate tool for passengers is one that would incorporate price, time, and this, and maybe it combines all three together and recommends different flights to you for these combinations of reasons. But because we find that flights often don't have 100% reliability, because the average is in the 80s and can be even lower when you're talking about flights with multiple connections, we think it really is an important factor that should be considered by companies or airlines in some way in their tools that consumers use.
Mm-hmm. Did you look at, of course, when you travel, weather is a big factor. Does that figure into any of your research or your models? It would be hard to do, wouldn't it?
Yes, so we don't right now. We just look at historically how much variability there has been in certain flights. Of course, that can be because of weather, but so that would be reflected in that flying through certain locations that have a lot of bad weather would have more uncertainty. So it's captured, but in kind of an indirect manner.
Mm-hmm. You preface this whole conversation by saying there's a lot of data out there that's not being used that you were capturing and analyzing there. How transparent are airlines, commercial airlines, about their operations? Do they hold some cards really close to their chests and data that you would like to have, but it's just not there, that the airlines are not providing?
Definitely. They keep their pricing strategies pretty close to the vest.
Mm-hmm.
One of my former students actually works in pricing for Delta, but he doesn't spill the beans. But as you know, depending on how close to the day of the flight, you get different prices for the same flight. And there was an article that came out today about how even if you fly direct to a particular location versus an indirect. Sometimes the prices can be very different, and how they choose to do that is a very closely hidden secret for each airline and their strategy of how they tend to maximize revenue. So they don't want other airlines to know what they're doing. That's sort of their maybe competitive advantage is
how
they do.
Are there categories of pricing, though, that are known?
Well, if you book your ticket, it'll say, like, if you have a Category K ticket or G or whatever, and those mm-hmm. reflect how high or low the prices that you get. So if you
It'll say it right on the ticket.
Yeah. So when you go and book on one of the airlines, it'll say Category G or something like that. And so when price suddenly goes up, it means they sold all of them of a particular price class. But how they set that price and all of that, that's all behind the scenes, because they got to think of the trade-offs of too expensive, you won't book it. Not if expensive enough, they won't have enough for those business travelers that mm-hmm. go through Des Moines who are willing to pay top dollar.
Is this echoed in other countries, in Europe, for example? Do you know anything about that? Are we unique in having this system that is so impenetrable in some ways?
Well, they still have the same issues of travel reliability in Europe, obviously. But they have some different rules there, though, in terms of if you have a delay. I believe if it's over 2 hours in European countries, you get a financial cash reimbursement based on how long your delay is.
And that's mandated.
That's
not
mandated.
Just, that's not
it's
just
European travel rules. So yeah. I recently traveled Houston to Cedar Rapids, and I had an 11-hour delay that then turned into a cancellation, and I got a bag of Cheetos.
In Europe, you would have...
I would have cashed in. So the same things can happen, but maybe the reward or payback or something is a little bit different in some other places.
There's a term in your research called delay propagation. What is that?
So that refers to the fact that morning flights are typically better because it's the first flight of the day.
Okay, what you mentioned before.
Yeah, where mm-hmm. like if, you know, that first flight runs into weather or a late crew member or something like that, that can happen more and more over the course of the day, or the last flight of the day is much more likely to depart late yep. and arrive late than the first flight of the day.
Okay, and we all know the experience of being lined up for a flight and then you get the announcement that we are overbooked and we need so many of people to take vouchers. We need to get 10 people off this plane by hook or by crook. Somehow we're going to get you off this plane. So what's going on there? Have you looked into that at all?
No, that goes into that field of revenue management, of that idea of how airlines are choosing to maximize the revenue they can get from a flight.
That's in their secret stuff.
So that's in their secret stuff of how much they choose to overbook.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a strategy they're guessing.
Right. Right, and they're reckoning with some people being annoyed, but then right. being happy because they might get a great voucher.
Right, and that applies the same with hotels as well. You can also get to a hotel and they overbooked your room. They yeah. have a lot of the same issues there as well.
What about if you booked a flight and you knew the chances that your luggage would be lost? Are there chances of that?
Yes, and that's actually something we want to look at, but has not been publicly available yet. They will just give general statistics, like a certain airline loses 3% of their bags or 2% of their mm-hmm. bags, but they are soon going to make that publicly available, much more detailed information about luggage. That's a funny question, because when we submitted this paper to be published in a journal, we got back that this is fascinating, we were interested, but I want to know what itinerary is my bag going to make it? And I was like, we'd like to know that, but we don't have enough data yet to do that.
From personal experience flying over the Atlantic and back a number of times in my life, we have learned, my family, my wife and I have learned, that you want to stay on one airline. Keep your bag in one airline system. One time we had like three different airlines to get to Europe and three or four stopovers. So the airlines are exchanging your bag.
Yeah.
Bad. Bad, just from personal experience.
Yeah. Uncertainty.
Uncertainty. Bing, bing, bing. Uncertainty.
Yeah.
what do you see out there that you want to study in the future, Anne, in this area? So
with the same co-authors, we've been looking at the integration of cars with this, because for a lot of us who live in not so big a city, there may be multiple choices of what airport we want to go to. Maybe we want to choose between going to Cedar Rapids or Moline or driving to O'Hare. So we've done some work with looking at, is it always better to travel to the biggest or the closest airport? And then we're currently working with bus data to look at how you could recommend for someone a way to go somewhere on the bus that would be reliable, make all your connections and things like that.
We'll look forward to that. Ann Campbell, professor in the Department of Business Analytics, also the Henry B. Tippey Research Professor at the University of Iowa School of Business. Ann, this is fascinating. I'm going to book some tickets in the coming weeks. Before I push the confirm, can I call you up?
Of course. Just don't blame us if it doesn't work.
Okay. Ann Campbell, thanks so much. River to River is produced by Rick Brewer and Shirley Wong, also Caitlin Harrop. Also, Stephanie Nobriga helped us out today. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow on the program, it's Politics Day. Dennis Goldford of Drake University, Sarah Mitchell of the University of Iowa weigh in on how the 4th District race is shaping up. Well, maybe you heard in the news that J.D. Scholten will be challenging, if he is the nominee, Steve King in the 4th District. We'll get their thoughts on that race. Hope you'll tune in tomorrow for Politics Day. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.